views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hello, everybody. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour, and let us help you experience some really groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month on Cultural Brilliance, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture and organizational development helping you to understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I am really excited to have Gary Barron here with us. We're going to be talking about the evolution of organizations, and Gary's going to share some really new perspectives with us on how our organizations can work more effectively, how they can organize differently to meet the needs of the current era that we're in. So this perspective on our larger culture can help us more easily understand how we can really create brilliant organizations and cultures and what holds us back from that. Let me share a little bit about Gary. So Gary Barron is a successful entrepreneur, and he has more than 30 years of experience starting and building businesses. He is a partner in multiple purpose-driven enterprises, and he's going to talk today a little bit about those enterprises and what makes them purpose-driven. And he's a big believer in compassionate and disruptive leadership. He also believes that personal development and growth are actually just as important as the work that we do in our organizations. He's a Holacracy practitioner and a capital investor, and he's working to decouple decision-making and ownership rights in organizations while broadening access the organizations have to distributed authority ecosystems and how we and our systems of governance in organizations. So by growing and nurturing socially impactful businesses, Gary creates both large-scale and local positive impact. Welcome, Gary.
Thanks, Claudia. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. I think we're going to have a great show.
Yep.
So, yeah. So the first thing I'd love to ask you about, I know one of the things we wanted to talk about today was Holacracy and your journey into Holacracy and how that's really manifested for you. But for those of us that aren't as familiar with Holacracy, would you mind defining it? What does it really mean?
Sure. Holacracy is an operating system for organizations. Traditional organizations might have an org chart and titles and job descriptions, things of that nature, and ways of running meetings. Holacracy is sort of like what you would get when you get a new computer with a clean operating system, nothing on it at all, no apps, no special configurations, and it allows you to build the organization, let it evolve organically, and it has all kinds of ways to that. Roles rather than job titles or individuals move work through the organization. So it's really a hierarchy of work, not of people. Mm-hmm. And that work comes up in the form of roles, and they have accountabilities, and then people fill those roles. Of course, you need people in an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other constructs within Holacracy, how meetings are run. There's the idea of governance and mm-hmm. and tactical, and mm-hmm. those always two important things in a business, working on the business and in the business, and mm-hmm. those also have some ways of showing up within the Holacracy operating system.
Oh, that's fascinating. So it sounds like it takes the traditional way of looking in an organization and really turns it on its head, right? That suddenly it's a hierarchy of work rather than roles, which is a really different way of thinking about organizations.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. It's actually a more natural way. It's really the way things happen in nature. A lot of times, mm-hmm. Holacracy, I'll look at some of the ways that it is designed, it has this natural evolutionary organic way of allowing an organization to be more dynamic and responsive to what's going on, opportunities, threats in the environment.
And how did you start your journey into Holacracy? What was that? What's the story there?
Oh, wow. All right. So I was looking for Holacracy about 20 years ago. Unfortunately, it just wasn't invented yet.
Right.
And that was showing up in some of the reading that I was doing around the learning organization and the ideas and concepts like agile and responsive types of work environments. One of my favorite companies, W.L. Gore, had this idea of dynamic teams, self-forming teams. And there were other organizations that were just, it was fascinating to watch how they were able to be so responsive and flat in terms of not having, people who may not have been high, had titles and, they opened up the opportunities to anybody could speak up and bring an idea forward. So, I made many attempts studying the different organizations that were working this way. And, I followed the work of Peter Senge, Fifth Discipline, in the early 90s, and just trying to do bolt-ons, just a training here, a training there. And then in 2007, Holacracy One was launched, the actual operating system that came out of, some of the frustrations maybe Brian Robertson, who is the founder of Holacracy, was having. And he designed an operating system with rules, and it was almost a cookbook of how to do it. Mm-hmm. And that evolved over a number of years. And I didn't actually discover that this was available until 2014. So it was already through many iterations and a little more matured by the time I got to it. But as soon as I saw it, it was, wow, that's exactly what I've been looking for. And there's somebody that can operationalize it and help bring it into an organization. I could follow a blueprint.
And what's an example of a way that you've been able to use it in maybe one of your companies?
Well, at the time I was running five different companies and I did sometimes I'll just rip the Band-Aid off. I did 5 companies at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Ouch. I still feel the sting.
Yeah.
And I was just so excited about it. Mm-hmm. That I brought in, I actually used the consulting from Holacracy One. There's a way you can do it on your own. Open versions of how to do this. It's online. And, a lot of organizations do this on their own, or they get a little bit of consulting from Holacracy One. But this was too big, too important, and I was really betting a lot on it. And I decided to go all in with it. And so we used it in all of the different companies, and each company was in a different place in terms of its maturity and the business that it was working on. And there were individuals that were, in multiple companies. So there was a lot of handholding, and we worked closely with Holacracy One. We went to their practitioner training, and really got a lot of people up to speed with the rules. But then there's actually getting into it and doing it. So you can read about it, you can hear about it, but until you actually do it and live it, you really don't know what it is. And it's just part of the learning. So, but it changed. It really did change everything. Literally overnight. And part of the journey was to figure out, what does it mean now? How do we translate from the old way to the new way?
I'm curious, what the level of challenge was involved in that. Did some people say, this just really isn't for me? Other people embraced it, or what was that experience like?
I think we got a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Some people one day you're a VP of something, and then the next day, you know, you have this role. And so that didn't necessarily feel good. And then others were curious, others were scared, others were fascinated. And so it really was a lot of different perspectives. And these are all really important to try to consider and help people where they are, wherever they are in understanding of this new way of organizing, to try to help them understand it, understand the new rules. And so it really required a lot of work. It was not easy. And 3 years later, into it, we're still evolving this. And so it's not a quick fix to anything. It's really really going down to the foundation of the organization. I like to say it's not a bolt-on, you know, a quick fix or a something that you can just put in and walk away and everything's fine. So we really, it was almost as if we were acquired by another company with a different culture, but that happened to be us. So it's been quite a learning experience.
And that's really fascinating, like what you just were saying, you know, going down to the foundation of the organization and then actually having this feeling of being acquired, right? Because your culture was changing so much.
Yes.
That's really, really interesting. So one thing I'm curious about before we go to break is, what, generally speaking, what does it feel like in some of your companies that are now have this, you know, organization of holacracy? What does it feel like to be there from a cultural perspective?
It's sometimes a roller coaster ride, because, you know, you've got the work to get done, but then one of the challenges of holacracy is the idea of role and soul. So you're moving work, and you, as much as holacracy would like it to just be work, there's a person inside that role doing it. And so there's definitely some challenges around how to how to manage that, how to, and for a lot of people, it's a lot of personal reflection and thinking. For me, I've been humbled many times. The power that I used to have as CEO is, that was gone. I had to think about, well, what, you know, sent me home frustrated on certain, you know, nights, and trying to rethink, like, well, why is that important? And it really was just very eye-opening, very reflective, very meditative, and just, so the emotions are just like all over the place. But 3 years later, I have no regrets. It's been a learning experience, life changing, and I think really a good thing for our organization.
Well, that's wonderful. That's great to hear. And we are actually going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about holacracy and also another form of organization called deliberately developmental organizations. So stay tuned. We will be right back with Gary Barron and the evolution of organizations.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Hey, did you know why they call the foundation? It's called the foundation because it completely eliminates your foundation for what you thought your reality was and creates a whole new space where you can have an entirely new reality that is foundationless. So from my point of view, they should call it the unfoundation or the foundationlessness. Either way, there's a big new global rewrite happening again because these guys cannot stop changing. There should be like a Change Anonymous that Gary and Dane go to. And it's happening April 28th to May 1st. You can find out about it at accessconsciousness.com/global foundation. It's happening in Paris. Go to Paris or do it online or find a pod near you. These are all the options you have. And what else is possible?
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
On Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. My guest today is Gary Barron, who is talking with us about the evolution of organizations. We're having a really fascinating conversation for those of you who have just joined us. Before we dive back into our discussion, I want to make sure everyone knows how to contact Gary. Gary, could you share your contact info with listeners?
Yeah, sure. I can be reached at GBARON at VSEinc.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much for sharing that.
Okay.
So before the break, Gary and I were talking about his journey with Holacracy. And one of the things you said right at the end of that, our conversation there, Gary, really struck me. You were talking about how much this shift in how you run your organization, like this fundamental, incredible change in mindset, right, and operating system in the organization has really changed you, right? It really changed you as a leader. And it reminded me of a comment one of my colleagues has always said, and she said, you cannot change an organization without being changed yourself through the process. And it sounds like that was something you were touching on as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That resonates very much with me. Holacracy, there was such a large investment in that. I had to take it very seriously. And I was interested in learning too. And so it really required me to change the normal protocol. You know, I was not CEO anymore. I filled roles. And so the stage was set for a different kind of learning and different kind of interaction. Plus, we had the coaches to help out and remind me when I was acting like the old CEO.
Right. Exactly. Sometimes it takes a while to learn that new way of being, right, for all of us.
Yeah. Well, you have to unlearn before you
unlearn and then learn. Right, right, yeah. Right. And so you've also spent time not only in Holacracy, which would have been enough, it sounds like, on its own, but you've also been spending time working with creating organizations that are deliberately developmental, which I know is from Bob Keegan and others' work, right? They have the new book out on Everyone Culture, Creating a Deliberately Developmental Organization. I love that book and that work. I'd be curious to know where, you know, how have you brought that into some of your companies? What's your experience been like with that so far?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, a lot of learning, and this is the whole people side of things that, you know, I explained that Holacracy really does not explicitly give any direction as far as how to manage that. It's just about the work. Mm-hmm. And so the DDO concept is really the idea of, you know, weaving into the culture, weaving in the development of individuals, and making that just as important as the work itself. Mm-hmm. And so this is part of the journey to really, you know, when we're looking at Holacracy, there needs to be more, and people really need that kind of growth opportunity. And Holacracy brings something called just complete transparency into the organization. And so part of being deliberately developmental requires a lot of transparency, very frank feedback, and that just doesn't happen automatically. There are you know, approaches to doing this that require education and training and just intention. So, you know, I've been working with some consultants. And certainly reading the book is part of it. And then we're using different ways of measuring where we are as an organization, something called Lectica. Mm-hmm. that we use. Working with individuals to help us evolve our capabilities, you know, is just our growth capacity. Sometimes it's said that there's people in a normal organization might be, they have two jobs. One is to look good and protect yourself, and the other is to get your work done. And so all the energy that goes into looking good and protecting yourself and you know, protecting your status, if that can go away, all that energy can be put into developing your growth and your capability. You then have an opportunity to you know, advance your career, and so it's a win-win for the organization and the individual.
And so that last point you made that I read in the book also about how much time we in many organizations were spending, like you said, protecting ourselves, playing the political games, showing up, you know, in a way we think the organization wants us to show up. It takes so much time and energy. And it is fascinating to think about if you're able to take all that time and energy and put it into your own growth and development, what else could you contribute to the organization? I sometimes think about how organizations could really skyrocket, right? With putting all that energy back in.
Definitely. And, you know, what within the context of DDO, gaps and problems are looked at as opportunities, not mm-hmm. as bad things. You know, a failure is something to learn from and to build upon. So that's where the real learning happens, when you're in that sort of discomfort zone. And unless you're pushing the edge into discomfort, that can, you know, the idea, we all want to be comfortable. That's sort of a natural thing. We seek comfort, but unless we're going to step outside of our comfort zone, there's not a real good opportunity to learn and to advance ourselves. And so in a DDO, there's discomfort, but it's not a sadistic discomfort. It's one that is with great care and good intention behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking to someone recently who was reminding me that we even our physical bodies seek homeostasis, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're asking people to move, as you said, into the discomfort zone, right? It's sometimes it's asking them to do a lot, you know, and to learn how to be, in my experience, to learn how to be uncomfortable temporarily, and that can actually lead them to a really good place of learning.
Yeah.
It's
funny. I've heard it called getting comfortable with discomfort.
Yeah. It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. There's a tendency to want to, you know, go the other way or back out of it. But I'm living in this and practicing it and modeling it. It's been very interesting for me to challenge myself, mm-hmm. because as I move through that on the other side, it's just incredibly energizing and rewarding. It doesn't feel good going in sometimes, but as you work through it and there's some patience required and things like that, on the other side, it's incredibly rewarding.
Absolutely. One thing I wanted to ask you about that really struck me in the book and Everyone Culture was this idea of what they called well-held vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I actually was fortunate enough to hear not Bob Keegan, but a couple of the other co-authors of that book speak last fall. And they taught the person speaking said, and I'm forgetting his name right now, but he started out by saying, you know, we went into these three organizations that are in the book. And we said, we thought that we'd see that they were really successful because of some policy or procedure that they never expected well-held vulnerability or psychological safety to be really the root and foundation of what allowed these organizations to be deliberately developmental. Mm-hmm. And that they were actually surprised by it. And I thought that was such a great story about how we sometimes are still not, you know, it's not necessarily routine at all to think, how can we create psychological safety in our organization? What would that actually look like? And I'm curious if you've had any experience with that yet as you've worked on this people side of things, right? The DDO side of things.
Sure. I think it has to come down to, at some level, trust. Mm-hmm. And creating a safe space, a safe environment. A lot of times when people are critiqued or confronted in many organizations, that's that second job kicking in. You know, I can't look bad. I'm going to get fired. I'm going to look bad in front of my peers. And so I think really the what has to happen in order for individuals in an organization to hold that as something desirable, I think they describe the edge. You know, you sort of, you know, advance your edge. That's where you're weak, and you can, move. If you work with that, you then can turn it into a strength. But for people to expose that and work with it, there has to be an environment of trust. It's a little bit of chicken and the egg going on there. And so it's probably going to take some individuals to jump into it and then others to evolve with it. So it's a lot like Holacracy. This is a process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm working with some consulting and some individuals to help facilitate processes and really start to weave this into our everyday work, where it's just as much the work we're doing as well as developing ourselves. And so that's you can't develop yourself unless you are exposing your vulnerabilities and leaning into them.
Well said. It's so true. Sometimes we hope to develop ourselves without that, right? Without being vulnerable, but you really can't have one without the other. We're going to go ahead and take a break. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. When we come back, Gary Barron and I are going to continue talking about this really fascinating subject of how different ways of creating, structuring, and evolving our organizations. And we're going to particularly focus on what purpose-driven enterprises look like. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
If you're dealing with fear and anxiety, you've probably noticed that the more you fight these emotions, the stronger they seem to get. Dr. Friedemann Schaub, the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution, explains that instead of suppressing, we need to identify and resolve the deeper, subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety. His personal breakthrough program has helped thousands worldwide to overcome their emotional challenges. To learn more, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com and schedule your free consultation with Dr. Schaub now.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
What if your body and mind were the compasses to the secrets, mysteries, and magic of life? Glenna Rice, co-host of The Questionable Parent, is inviting you to access all that is possible. Glenna is a 10-year certified veteran access consciousness facilitator who offers an amazing variety of life-changing classes and workshops. Work with Glenna from anywhere, with teleclasses and workshops all over the globe. To learn more and see Glenna's current schedule of events, classes, and workshops, visit glennarice.com.
Tune in to Dynamics of Diversity Radio, scripting the new narrative for immigration with leading experts Kripa Upadhya and Steve Tanijo on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will remove the noise that often accompanies discussions on this topic and share a new perspective on the dynamics of immigration and diversity, ever reminding us that together we are all at the core of innovation, excellence, and positive change. Visit OrbitLawPLLC.com for upcoming topics.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and if you're just joining us, I'm here today with Gary Barron, and he and I are talking about the evolution of organizations, some really new and cutting-edge ways to work with organizations, design organizations, organize the people, and people work within organizations. So we are going to be moving on to talking about, Gary, purpose-driven enterprises. And I know that's one of your specialties, isn't it?
I'm a student, and yes, but I've had an experience with it, and it's definitely, I guess you could call it a specialty, but I still feel like a student.
Oh, well, that's great, right? Always more to learn. Always more to learn. Uh-huh. So what is a purpose-driven enterprise? What does that mean to you when you say that?
It's an enterprise that has a very clear reason of why it exists, and usually it's much more than just that, just for profit. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a purpose-driven enterprise might have up to four bottom lines that they pay attention to and value, just as all equally. There's purpose, people, planet, and profit. So a purpose-driven enterprise is building processes and structures and has values that really incorporate those ideas into their work. And so it really is a much larger context, and in the long run really has proven to be incredibly effective as a way to approach business.
Yeah, I love that. Purpose, people, planet, and process, right? And those multiple bottom lines. So could you share, I know you have some companies that are purpose-driven enterprises. Would you be able to share an example of one of them and how this plays out?
Sure, yeah. Novatorium is one of the organizations that I had founded. And it's an accelerator, a studio investment organization. And what it does is it helps startups who are in either a early stage or startup mode. And it's for for-purpose enterprises that are practicing holacracy. So these are organizations that have a big idea that will have high impact. Mm-hmm. And they would, but you know, they need all different kinds of help. They need possibly financing. They need assistance with just how to organize themselves. But usually there's a theme or something that is really driving them towards some purpose. So one of the startups was a vertical farming company, or vertical farming business. And it was a vet who had come back from Iraq, you know, got a degree in horticulture and wanted to create sustainable local food for individuals, you know, like where there were food deserts. So so that was an example, but and had some good business experience, had some ability with horticulture and growing. And so we worked with that individual to start up vertical farming. Another one was sort of health, it was a health and wellness around eating healthy. And this was chefs cooking meals to provide very plant strong, highly nutritious types of meals that had no processed foods in them, and help people manage a healthier lifestyle. In fact, a funny story is the chef who got involved with this. You know, he first said he could do anything, and he started cooking this way. And he happened to be diabetic, about 100 pounds overweight. About 9 months into this, he had come off. He started eating some of the food that he was preparing, and and he came off of his insulin. He had five amputations prior.
Oh my gosh!
I know. So his doctor was just amazed with what was happening with him, and so just by applying for a chef position with this particular company, it probably saved his life.
Oh, it absolutely sounds like it did save his life. Yeah. That's a really wonderful story.
Yeah.
About impact. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the kind of impact, you know, we look for, just improving people's lives in lots of different ways.
And I'm curious about your another company that you're a partner in, Encode.org. What does Encode do?
So Encode helps organizations who are practicing holacracy address some of the things that holacracy doesn't do explicitly. And yeah, so I'm a partner in Encode, and I joined them because of the pain that I was feeling that holacracy was inflicting. And it was, again, it was that sort of developmental pain. Like, I don't like pain, but I understood at some level why this was going on. And holacracy opened up a lot of problems that were opportunities to solve. And Encode really addressed those things, focusing on social foundations, the people side of things, as well as financial and legal you know, things related to a business, you know, those constructs and foundations. And so Encode is a great organization to consider working with to help complement some of the, or address some of the problems that holacracy stirs up. And so that itself, Encode itself is a startup. And so it's interesting as we're sort of, we use the term eating our own dog food. And part of Encode, one of the founders of Holacracy One is actually a founder in Encode. So he comes with the full breadth of experience that came from Holacracy and has been really very helpful in bringing that perspective into the Encode. And then everyone in Encode is also practicing Holacracy in other organizations as well, and is either a coach coach level, or yeah, pretty much everyone's coach level or practitioner level.
So it sounds like you've, oh, go ahead.
You can learn more about that at ENCODE.org. It's pretty fascinating.
Oh yeah. Good to know. So ENCODE.org, and ENCODE is E-N, right? Code.org.
Yeah. ENCODE.org.
Yeah. It's such a different way. It sounds really refreshing, and it sounds like what you're doing at ENCODE and Novatorium both are really giving companies and people an opportunity to look at their organizations differently, right? Really organize them differently, make them purpose-driven. And those folks I'm guessing who may have felt like many of us have, right? We wish organizations could work better. You know, we'd love to, like you did, you were a seeker, right, in the 90s. We need something different and better here, but we can't figure out what it is. It sounds like you're starting, you know, you're really starting to provide some answers for people.
Yeah. At a lot of different levels, and a lot, again, the people, the work, you know, as we are becoming more global, real time, it creates this environment where the nature of work itself is changing. And so we as individuals have to respond to that. Otherwise, we sort of get left behind. And so these organizations are evolutionary, and they are really addressing at the most fundamental level some of these challenges that we have working within organizations, and serve as guides and catalysts to help move things forward.
Yeah, I can really hear that. It sounds like incredible, you know, really, really profound and important work. One of the things that we mentioned in your bio when I was sharing your background in the introduction is something you had shared, which is that you believe a lot in compassionate and disruptive leadership. And I was that really struck me, compassionate and disruptive. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think the disruptive part is the uncomfortable part.
Oh, okay.
That. Mm-hmm. Really, to grow, things need to be disrupted. They need to be challenged. Otherwise, they stagnate and calcify and die. And so that's that disruptive part. It's gotten to the point where sometimes if I feel comfortable, I start to get uncomfortable. I think a book by Andrew Grove, Only the Paranoid Survive. I think it's I like to be comfortable, but not too long.
But not too long. Yeah.
And then the compassionate part is about caring about people. I have a personal commitment to the development of people, of individuals. And it's sort of just a very fulfilling part of what I do, mentoring, the enabling, and what that can create is just incredible. And so for some people, just a little nurturing one way or another, and maybe others more, but if that can be unlocked, it's just incredible what ordinary individuals can do, because there might be stuff in the way, and if you can find ways to advance that through these new ways of working and opportunities, they can do amazing things.
Absolutely. They really can, right? People having so much untapped potential, in my experience, so much untapped potential. And we're going to take a break. And when we come back, Gary's going to talk about some recommendations, strategies, and tips for organizations who are even thinking about some of these new ways of self-organizing. And part of that has to do with how do you get people to buy in? How do you help people understand that these can be some really transformational opportunities for them? So this is Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Yeah. gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher, Sarah Luce, brings her unique style to the hit show, Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit saraluce.com. That's SARALOOS.com. Do you feel that there's a bigger, better life for you? Is there anything holding you back from living the life you were meant to live? If you'd like to find your life's true purpose and calling, join the world's foremost authority on primal spirituality, David Karsher, in Becoming a Son Radio, emotional and spiritual intelligence for a happy, fulfilling life. Tune in once a month to Becoming a Son Radio with David Karsher on the Dr. Pat Show and Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit davidkarsher.com today.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the RAD Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-972-5366.
When your body is awakened, your spirit comes alive. Dana Canetto is a transformational guide, embodiment coach, and spiritual mentor assisting women in realigning with their truth and embodying who they are by connecting to the wisdom of their body. Tune in every month on Transformation Talk Radio and the Dr. Pat Show Network for Body Divinity Radio with Dana Canetto. For more information on Dana and her services, visit danacanetto.com. That's DanaCanetto.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and I'm talking today with Gary Barron, for those of you who are just joining our show. And today we are talking about evolutionary organizations, and we have had such a fascinating conversation. So one of the things, Gary, I know we wanted to make sure to touch on today in our conversation was some recommendations or tips or strategies for leaders and organizations who are thinking about, you know, what if they want to even consider holacracy, or they're interested in becoming a deliberately developmental organization or a purpose-driven organization. What are some things they really need to consider?
So I think a good place to start is exploration. And certainly it's easy to do that online. There's books, there's YouTube videos. Holacracy One actually has with a free online webinar. I think it lasts about 75 minutes. I would highly recommend anybody considering that or curious to go to their website and check it out. You can sign up for it. And then they also have taster sessions, which are a little more, they're usually in person, and I might be like a half day you know, for a nominal amount of money. So, so that's the way to start to, I think, begin to explore this, because there's a lot there, and there's a lot online that you can look at. And another part of this is there's critiques in all directions. This is something that is not easy. It is just not easy. So, but it's incredibly fulfilling, and in my experience, very much worth it. But you know, if you go online, you'll see critiques on both sides of how wonderful it is, or how some bad experiences that may have occurred, and they're real. And the other point of this is, holacracy is not for everyone. And so I think that research and exploration into do I feel comfortable working in this? you know, we've had people in our organizations that have left, good people, that it just did not work the way they were used to working, the way they've been successful all of their career. And so that's another thing to be mindful of, that it's not a bad thing. This isn't the ultimate perfect thing for everyone. So, mm-hmm. so that exploration and investigation up front, I think, is really very important.
Yeah, I would agree. And I like, you know, I like your perspective on it, that it's not for everybody. So it's not the end all be all. It's another option that works really well for some organizations, right? You know, for whom this is a fit, or you know, it offers them an option that maybe they've been looking for, like you were.
Yes.
A different way of organizing and operating. And when you know, you've said a couple times in our conversation that this is not easy, although it's fulfilling. What are the parts of it that aren't particularly easy in your experience?
Well, certainly feeling uncomfortable.
Oh, feeling uncomfortable. Yes.
Sometimes in some of the meetings, they can be very frustrating. I personally have felt frustrated, but that I have learned that is a signal of opportunity. That frustration, where is it coming from? In Holacracy, one of the things, some of the reflections are, it teases things apart. In traditional organizations, things are sometimes bundled together, and it's hard to know where the problem is coming from. So sometimes some of those artifacts are still there as you're transforming to Holacracy, or even in Holacracy, things need to get teased apart. So being sort of aware of that and being able to step through that can be a challenge, but it helps to bring clarity to where exactly the issue is or the opportunity to resolve is. And taking it apart really gives you that clarity. And then some things that are incredibly difficult can be very easy to solve.
Yeah, and I love what you said about frustration as an example, for example, because you mentioned it. Frustration is signaling an opportunity.
Yes.
And so often I think if we have frustration or anger or something we might perceive as a more negative emotion, we might take it as something's wrong in this situation, right?
Yes.
There's no opportunity here. And this is really the opposite. Whoa, if I feel frustrated, there's an opportunity to, it's a signal. We can improve something. We can resolve something. We can solve a problem. Is that the spirit of it?
It very much is. And
yeah.
The other part of this is what am I doing to cause this problem? How am,
right.
how am I contributing to that? You know, a lot of times it's easy to blame someone else or something else that you feel you don't have control over. Mm-hmm. In so many instances, by reframing it or rethinking about it or looking at how I'm contributing to it is actually a major part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That so often is, isn't it? what is my contribution to the situation?
Yeah.
Years ago, I had a someone who was coaching me, and she had a great thing that she would say is like, you know, Claudia, is it possible that it's even, this is, there's even, you have even 5% ownership in this problem, right? And I always remember that was such a great, like, oh, well, I could probably look at 5% ownership, right? It was a way to start opening the door to seeing my contribution to the situation.
Right, until it got to 95%, which is the real number.
Right, you're exactly. We had to start small sometimes.
I know. It's all their fault.
Right. If only so-and-so would such and such, yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. And so any other recommendations or tips? I mean, I love this, that, you know, say go slow, explore, you know, go online, take a half day session. Anything else you would recommend?
Well, some books, Reinventing Organizations, Read in Everyone Culture. You know, these are some books, but I really think that the important thing is to expose yourself to as much of this as possible. And what will happen is the resources will start to emerge, and you know from there I think that it will evolve. I mean, that's how it happened for me. The more I learned, the more I was drawn into it, and that's really going to that's going to be an important part of that journey. And that journey never ends.
Mm-hmm. It's ongoing, right? You're never done.
Oh, never done. And as the environment changes, new things will get disrupted and it'll feel like it's a setback, but it's just an opportunity to adapt to the environment. And so the other thing is patience.
Mm-hmm.
Just be a, take a deep breath. In the past couple of years, my meditation practice has sort of calmed me down many times.
Right.
So I think part of it is also is taking care of yourself, as well as be the best, that you can be. Take good care of yourself, eat well, exercise, stress management types of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that then you're going to come fully present, fully ready to engage with this kind of stuff. And again, it's incredibly rewarding when it works.
Yeah. And two things, as we're wrapping up my hearing, you mentioned adapting, right? So it sounds like when someone goes through this process, right, of deciding to adapt, the Holacracy journey, right, engages in that journey, decides to move forward with their organization. I mean, it sounds like opens people up to be much more adaptive as individuals as well, not just as an organization.
Yes, it's a personal journey as well as an organizational journey. And Holacracy One does it in increments and steps. So you get to, before I made the decision to do this, to move forward, there were, months of some exploration and trying things out, and there were all kinds of points that I could have bailed along the way. So, mm-hmm. and some organizations do, or some where they delay, we're not ready for it. There's lots of reasons. So.
Lots of reasons. Yeah. And it's just real. I like what you said at the end. You need to be patient. You need to give it time and take care of yourself, right? This is really something you sink into. And it's a really new way of being. So Gary, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing such great information with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Claudette.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And I also want to thank all of our listeners for tuning into Cultural Brilliance Radio. Please join us again on the second and fourth Fridays of every month at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. And on our next show, we'll be talking with Marlene Chisholm, who is the author of a really great book called No Drama Leadership. Have a great week, and I'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.